Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Salute to Vladimir Putin show. Rick, I promised after our salute to Joseph McCarthy we would get out of politics, but politics just keeps coming up and biting us in the diaper area.
I think secretly you love politics. You're a political guy. You live for this stuff. You go home and you watched that entire Republican convention, didn't you?
I did not watch any of it, I don't think. I'm trying to remember. I did see.
You were waving your little baton. I mean, I guarantee you had your
Trump,
little flag.
Trump.
Had your little flag in the living room, and you were waving it and just shouting. And then the thing is, you're liable to do the same thing for the Democratic one as well, right?
Now, I heard Bill Clinton's speech in the Democratic one. I may have caught one speech in the Republican one. That's it. But you have to say, Vladimir Putin, first of all, apparently a U.S. Political broker now. He, by releasing, hacking and releasing emails, was able to affect the Democratic Party unity. He is also a lawyer. He is also a, he has a disease named after him. So we'll talk about that more after we do our introductions. I thought it was time to name our show after him. Salute to Vladimir Putin Show. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and here from the University of Kentucky, UK Manager of Communications Infrastructure, to explain to you how you can hack our web presence. Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. Moorhead State Public Radio has a website. Again, WMKY.org. Find us. Eventually you'll find your way to Health Matters on that site. There's a listing of our more recent shows. There's a link to the audio. You can, again, read the summaries. But really, the meat of the thing is listening to the audio right there. There's a link. There's a podcast link. You can search iTunes for the podcast. There's all kinds of ways to hear Health Matters other than live on, well, it's not even live, it's Memorex live kind of thing on Saturday and Sunday morning. So certainly encourage you to do that. But then there comes a point in time where you will come to the realization that you must interact with Health Matters, that we have asked so many dumb questions that you just feel compelled to say something or possibly ask one of your own. I mean, if you like us and you're listening to us, the chances are you get the same number of dumb questions. Go to facebook.com/HMRadioShow and you will find our fan page. Leave us a message, drop us some information, give us some feedback on the shows. Possibly you want to suggest a show topic or maybe even some content for a show. There's all kinds of things you can do there, but it is your chance to interact with the staff of Health Matters. I mean, we certainly look at the site. We post things from time to time. A lot of interesting stuff goes on. Facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show, from the American Medical Association, 5 Nutrition Facts Misconceptions That Sabotage Patient Health. So, Rick, I tried to think of a catchy rhyming phrase about 5 Nutrition Facts Misconceptions That Sabotage Patient Health, and I couldn't do it.
You obviously didn't try very hard.
Well,
there's tons there.
It was late in the afternoon. I'll let you, if you want, you can do it.
No, I'll pass on this one. I'll leave that to our wonderful host.
Okay, but here's 5 things that might sabotage patient health. This is about the nutrition facts label that's found on food packages.
There's labels on there?
Nutrition facts, yeah. You know those labels are there. You know those labels are there because you look at them to find the good stuff. This doesn't have enough sugar.
Are you kidding me? The stuff that the best stuff doesn't have labels. You put it on a cone.
Okay. I thought you were going to go for vegetables, and I was going to be proud of you. And that you don't put vegetables
Tony,
on a cone.
Tony.
Who puts vegetables on a cone? That's ridiculous, Rick.
Well, what about a broccoli spear? Wouldn't it look good in there?
A broccoli spear on a cone. First of all.
Only if you covered it in ice cream.
5 nutrition facts, misconceptions that sabotage patient health. Number one, and Rick, honestly, this never occurred to me. The percent daily values don't add up to 100%. Is a misconception.
Well, it's not a misconception. It's saying that this gives you X number. It's up to you to get to 100%.
Right. Well, yeah.
There is some responsibility of the end user.
Right. But I guess what they think is if you have, like, it gives you 6% of your vitamin D. It gives you 10% of your vitamin B12. And apparently they think that all those numbers should add up to 100% of something, but each of them is a percent of your recommended daily allowance of an individual vitamin.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and at the risk of offending everybody say, you know, I never once considered that. Now, I did consider that, well, for breakfast, a bowl of cereal is 15% of my daily required, needs for, pick a nutrient. So I just ate six bowls. Okay. I went ahead and got that goal.
You got the 100%.
I got that 100% knocked out before lunch.
Take the smallest percentage on the label and eat enough of that to get to 100, and you got 100% of everything. But the idea that the different nutrients in some way add up to 100% of something, that was weird to me. But realize that each of those is the percentage of the RDA for that individual nutrient, and you need to get 100% of that nutrient, but you can't make up for that by taking another nutrient at a different percent. Misconception number two. A 2,000-calorie daily diet should be used for general nutrition advice. Now, they mentioned if you are physically active, if you are a male physically active, age 16 to 25, you actually need between 3,000 and 3,200 calories. If you're an old sedentary man such as myself, you're down to 2,200. Most people would say males are 22 to 2,500, females 2,000. But an active female can get up to 2,400 in her teenage and early 20 years as well. But the key to it's activity. If you're moderately active, the best you can do as a woman is in your early 20s, 2,200 calories. If you're moderately active, the best you can do as a man is 2,800 from age 16 to 25. So, no, it's not 2,000, but 2,000 is pretty close. It's not a bad idea. When you're looking at these foods, you can get a general idea based on 2,000, 2,200, somewhere along in that line of how much of your daily amount they would be. Again, if you see a dish, you go to a restaurant, you see a dish that's 800, 1,000 calories, well, one out of three meals, that's probably okay if it's one of the big meals of the day. You get up to 1,700 calories, and then you're starting to push your calorie limit.
One of the big meals of the day? Did you mean to say it like that?
Well, I'm saying, yeah, you could eat two 800-calorie meals, and you would still have room for a third 800-calorie meal.
But 800 calories is like a medium French fry.
800 calories is like a Big Mac, I think. It's 600.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe, but it's...
But you can get, you can certainly get dishes at some of the fast food, especially the upscale fast food places, that are going to be 1,600-1,700 calories, and that's pretty close to your daily requirement. I mean, you might be able to add a Pop-Tart, but that's about it. Misconception number three, and this is a big one. This is a big one. Listen, everyone, small package foods aren't necessarily a single serving. You should always check the serving size and servings per container. Now, Rick and I know, we've had this before. If you look at a package of Girl Scout cookies or a package of Oreos, that's one serving.
Well, it is to me.
Yeah, the whole package,
I mean,
one
especially,
serving.
Especially if it's the mint.
Yeah.
The thin
I have
mints.
Been, you know, I do, I look at, I like granola, okay? You know, it's got some of that granola, it's got the nuts and so forth in it. And you look at that, and this little package you put in your pocket, it's got like 30 servings.
Right.
Well, a serving apparently is one nut.
Right.
And so I have
and
to be careful
case,
with that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. At any rate, realize that there is more than one serving. And then four, and we got five, but I'm going to say the fifth one. It's kind of complex. We'll do that next time. All calories count. They say, as a rule, 400 calories per serving is high.
Yeah.
I laugh at their high-calorie, 400-calorie serving. 100 calories is moderate. Moderate. So if you want to eat light, I guess you're looking at 25 to 50 calories.
No, they're crazy. So
that's weird, isn't it? This is the American Medical Association, Rick. You better be careful calling the American Medical Association crazy.
No.
Okay. I'm just suggesting.
No.
At any rate, 400 calories per serving, they say it's high. I think a Big Mac's around 600, I believe so, 600 to 800, and 400 is and was in my mind moderate. You could get by with you could have, again, 2,400 calories if you're a moderately active guy. You could do six of those 400-calorie servings. That's quite a few servings in my mind, but what do I know? At any rate, that's our sponsor, the Five Nutrition Facts and Misconceptions that Sabotage Patient Health, according to the American Medical Association. Two announcements to start the show. One, a reminder. We've announced this before. The Nurses Health Study. This is that massive study of nurses. They need RNs, LPNs, nursing students, 18 to 46 years old in the U.S. or Canada. Go to www.nhs3.org. Check it out. Now, what you're saying is you're going to fill out a survey. It's about a 30-minute survey, and you're going to keep doing it every year. So this is a long-term commitment. But if you want to advance public health and you are a nurse, this is a useful thing to do.
So exactly how many Big Macs do you eat?
I only eat one if I do. I rarely eat them.
I'm just saying, you're in tune with the calorie count.
Well, I know McDonald's menu because we made fun of it so much. And here's the thing, Rick. When I read stuff, they always talk about how many Big Macs it is, which is actually a pretty good unit of nutrition. if this is a two or three Big Mac meal, I know that's a really large meal. A one Big Mac meal, I wouldn't worry about the equivalent of a Big Mac. Again, I don't think of that as being a large, they said 400 calories. That's not even a Big Mac. That's like two-thirds of a Big Mac.
Right. Big Mac's 540.
540? Yeah.
But to throw a small fry in there, you're adding another 230.
Okay, so then you're up to about
770.
Yeah. So essentially what they said was a big portion size would be the Big Mac.
And that's a Big Mac and a small fry.
Right. Which nobody gets, by the way. Nobody gets a Big Mac and a small fry.
Exactly. My point exactly.
Yeah, so that's an artificial
thing. And
we've
talked a half a dozen times.
And that's another nutritional misconception that you get a small fry with a Big Mac. That's ridiculous.
But, I mean, how many times have we talked about that, that whoever came up with supersizing a meal became wealthy beyond? They are only behind the person who thought of putting bacon on everything.
Well, I mean, Ray Kroc, Ray Kroc didn't think about it, but his managers told him that people were digging around in the fry bag for leftover pieces and salt, and that he ought to make his fries bigger. And it was an easy thing to do. McDonald's was the supersizer, the original supersizer. Next up, another announcement. Friday, September 16th. This is for our local listeners. A lung cancer symposium at the Share Building in Moorhead. I don't know why I said that. In Moorhead. The Share Building, they're having a lung cancer symposium. That is where I work. I'm also in the symposium. I'm talking about lung cancer screening.
In case we haven't heard enough of you.
True. Absolutely. We talk about the state of lung cancer and tobacco disorders. Thomas Tucker is talking about that. Roberto Cardarelli from UK and Jamie Stutz from UK are talking about their research on lung cancer screening and on lung cancer. We also have special session on treating nicotine dependence. And this is not only healthcare professionals, but there also is a public component to this. If you are interested in learning more about lung cancer, that's Friday, September 16th at the Share Building. I believe that starts at 9 a.m. With registration and breakfast and goes until 4 p.m. Goes all day, Friday, September 16th. Mark your calendar, a lung cancer symposium at the Moorhead Center for Health Education and Research. I got 50 seconds. I'm going to go really fast about Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin. And who names your kid Vladimir Vladimirovich?
His mother.
Vladimir Vladimirovich. I mean, that just shows a lack of imagination.
Well, over there in Russia could be respectful.
Yeah, but it's like Wayne. You know, it's like, think of something else.
Or D-Wayne.
Yeah. He was born in October of 1952. He was Russian prime minister from 1999 to 2000, president from 2000 to 2008, then had to drop back to prime minister from 2008 to 2012 because he couldn't run for more than two consecutive terms. Then he has been president since 2012. So altogether, he has been in either first or second in command since 1999. We have been talking since this show started. We have to take a break. I'll tell you more about Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin in our next fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our Salute to Vladimir Putin show.
And this is the Rick Tony show.
Yeah, Vladimir Vladimirovich. I don't know.
So the Tony Verovich?
I don't know. I can't even. Tony. I don't know. You know, at some point, think of another name. It's just think of another name. And you know, there aren't that many kids named Vladimir. You want to name you want people to be
in
a little bit
US.
Impressed. Yeah, I know. I'm sure in Russia they have a lot. But you name your kid in Kentucky, you name your kid Vladimir, and it's going to get some attention. I promise you that. Very quickly.
This is coming from the guy that's Tony.
No attention there, I'll just tell you. But at any rate, he was either prime minister or president of Russia since 1999, studied German at St. Petersburg High School, speaks fluent German, studied law at St. Petersburg State University in 1970, graduated in 75. His thesis was on most favored nation trading principle. He was a KGB foreign intelligence officer for 16 years, joined Boris Yeltsin's administration, became acting president when Yeltsin resigned. This I did not know, Rick. Buddhism, Eastern Orthodox Christianity, Islam, and Judaism are Russians' traditional religions. They are part of Russia's historical heritage and they have state support. Construction and restoration of churches started in the 1990s. He has continued that. The state allows the teaching of religion in schools. Parents are either, they have a choice. You can either learn one of the basic religions or you can learn secular ethics. But they teach their kids either a religion or secular ethics in the schools. The problem is they sort of have the state subsumes religions rather than otherwise. So I don't think you would call that religious freedom. I think the state teaches you what they want you to know about the rules and regulations of a religion.
That's the reason you want religious freedom.
Yeah, I think so. And I mentioned he has a specific pathology named after him. There's something called Gunslinger's Gate. It was reported in the British Medical Journal last Christmas. A neurologist was watching film of Putin and some of his lieutenants walking, and they would swing their left arm normally, but their right arm was straight down at their side. And they call that Gunslinger's Gate. They assume because they were in the KGB, they've been taught to keep their hand on their weapon at all times. And so they stop swinging the right arm. It doesn't appear that he has anything neurologically wrong with him, but he does have an abnormal gait. And he is the only current head of state who has a pathologic gait named after him, I am almost certain. That's, again, Vladimir Putin. And, of course, he entered the news because he did try to manipulate the Democratic convention by hacking and releasing emails that were not favorable to the eventual nominee. Our sponsor for today's show, again, 5 Nutrition Facts, Misconceptions That Sabotage Patient Health. Number one, percent daily values don't add up to 100%. Well, of course they don't, because they are of different things. You would have 6% of one nutrient, 12% of another, 20% of another, and possibly 30% of another. They don't have to add up to 100. Each one of them is the percent you need of that particular nutrient. Two, 2,000-calorie daily diet should be used for general nutrition advice, but that's not true. Depends on your activity level. Maybe so, but a 2,000-calorie diet will get you in the ballpark. Three, and this was very discouraging, you should always check the serving size and servings per container on your packages, because packaged foods aren't necessarily packaged as a single serving. Four, all calories count. There's a rule, 400 calories per serving is high. 100 calories is moderate, according to the AMA. And people need to understand that fat-free doesn't mean calorie-free. Did you think fat-free meant calorie-free?
No.
I didn't think so. Some lower-fat foods may have as many calories as full-fat versions. That is absolutely true. If you replace fat with carbs, you wind up with the same number, or you wind up with higher-calorie foods. Five, and we've hit this on the show before, most dietary sodium, and sodium helps your body hold in fluids. Bad news if you have high blood pressure or heart disease. Maybe doesn't matter so much if you don't. That's still being debated. But if you do have high blood pressure or heart disease and you're trying to limit your salt, most dietary sodium doesn't come from table salt. More than 75% of your sodium comes from packaged and restaurant foods. And many patients unwittingly, Rick, eat far more than the recommended daily amount. Your sodium is going to come from 10 common types of foods: bread, cheese, deli foods, pizza, soup, savory snacks. Do you know what a savory snack is?
Right now on a diet? Yeah.
I had to look this up. The FDA savory snack is basically crunchy junk food. That's the alternate term. Potato chips, tortilla chips, corn chips, popcorn crackers, and so forth. It's stuff that is salty, but not really high in sugar.
So like
it's a savory.
Meat.
And then mixed pasta and meat dishes, basically spaghetti, meatballs, Chef Boyardee, SpaghettiOs, stuff like that, has quite a bit of salt in it. And also, keep in mind, sodium benzoate, sodium bicarbonate or baking soda, sodium nitrite, monosodium glutamate, all those have sodium as well. So you can get some sodium without ever consuming anything that is salty if your food is used as that as a preservative. That's our sponsor again, the 5 Nutrition Facts Misconceptions That Sabotage Patient Health. Rick, how tall do you think you are?
Think 6'2". Do you think I'm wrong?
A study, recent study, average adult heights in many countries appear to have peaked 30 to 40 years ago and have declined slightly since then. They looked at over 1,400 studies in 200 countries looking at the measured heights of 18 million people born between 1896 and 1996. And it was published in eLife. It was published online. Turns out Dutchmen born before 2000 were the world's tallest men. Guatemalan women born before 1900 were the shortest. South Korean women and Iranian men had the greatest gains, but Guatemalan women also were taller now. And Latvian women are now the world's tallest, and along with, I guess, the Dutch men are still tall. Again, it's about nutrition. The Americans reached their maximum average height in 1996 for men and 1988 for women. And since then, they have dropped. It may be that nutrition is not as good. That's one possibility. It may be that we have more Central and South American immigrants who in the country who are average height shorter than the average
changing
height of,
the numbers.
Yep, might be. Average heights in North America, Western Europe, and Japan rose quickly in the 20th century, then have shrank a little bit. African and South Asians have not grown very much and have also shrunk. Africans were taller when the colonial era ended in the 1960s, but since then, wars and nutritional disruption has actually decreased the average height of Africans. Just a thing to think about. The world is getting shorter. It will help you see over people at the concert.
I already have that luxury.
No, that's true. At 6'2", you are among the tallest people in the world.
Yep. And I thoroughly enjoy it. Don't get me wrong.
I can only imagine.
Yep, you can.
Only I could see what you could see. All right,
but
moving on.
You know, don't envy me in a rainstorm. That's the one time I do have it bad.
What do you mean, lightning?
No, it just hits me first.
Okay. I did not realize you were at such a disadvantage. I'm so sorry for you.
You know, it's amazing what those few milliseconds mean.
If you could just yell something out, then perhaps I could save myself.
Right. I mean, I'm your early warning system.
I got you. This was July 26, 2016. Now, Medicare Part D, if you remember.
Because there's not enough parts.
Yeah. Part D covers prescription benefits. And this was passed in the Bush administration. It was a horrendous compromise, but eventually he was able to appease all sides. And Medicare pays some for outpatient medicines. Now, one of the compromises they made is they said, well, you can't negotiate the price on those medicines. You simply you have to pay whatever the drug companies ask. Again, that was, as you might imagine, some lobbying by the drug companies and their supporters. Got that stuck in, so they're not able to negotiate prices. They have what's called catastrophic prescription drug coverage, and for 2016, if you pay more than $4,800 out of pocket for your drugs, then enrolled in Medicare, Medicare's catastrophic kicks in, and it pays for 80% going from there. Their catastrophic prescription coverage increased from $27 billion in 2013 to $51 billion in 2015. 2 years. Doubled, essentially almost doubled in price.
Well, that's not good.
Not good at all. And the big ones, as you might imagine, hepatitis C treatment, Harvoni, $6.3 billion was the single biggest drain on that catastrophic coverage. The third highest was the other hepatitis C treatment, Sovaldi at $1.2 billion. There was a couple of cancer treatments, Gleevec and Revlimid, something for multiple sclerosis called Copaxone, that was $1.1 billion. Catastrophic spending on both the hepatitis C medicines doubled over 2 years from about $3.5 billion up to $7.5 billion in 2015. This is the fastest growing share of Medicare's drug costs, and it's up to $137 billion in 2015. While 9% of beneficiaries reached the catastrophic coverage threshold, it accounted for 37% of Medicare's total drug costs. So this is eating Medicare alive because we are covering these expensive medicines, and we cannot, again, we cannot do anything to negotiate price. Jim Yocum, who's the senior vice president of Connecture, it's a group that tracks prescription drug prices, he says the incentive is to price drugs as high as they can because Medicare is prohibited from negotiating prices. The drug makers max out their pricing, and most of that will be covered by the federal government, which is us as taxpayers. It's one of the reasons why our insurance rates are rising. It's one of the reasons why Medicare is going broke. Now, Ron Wyden of Oregon and Chuck Grassley of Iowa want to seek more information. But as of right now, legally, there's no way they can stop the drug companies from doing this and essentially stripping Medicare bare by increasing their prices. And we've talked about this show after show after show, but since the Affordable Care Act was passed, these drug prices have, it's incredible, they have skyrocketed. And again, we're talking about, in 2 years, doubling the total amount that Medicare is paying for catastrophic drug coverage. Found something else here that's kind of interesting. This was, it was talking about drugs in the U.S. and then in other countries. Xarelto, that's one of the drug, I believe that's the one that has Arnold Palmer and a bunch of athletes driving around on golf carts, costs $292 in the U.S. for a month's supply, $48 in South Africa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, the Rheumatoid shipping is probably worse to hear.
Rheumatoid arthritis drug, Humira, $2,600 in the U.S. and over in Great Britain, $1,300, South Africa, $500. Again, Harvoni cost us $32,000 for 30 days, and you take it for 3 months. You get a total cost there of $96,000. It's $16,000 in Switzerland. You may have heard of a multiple sclerosis drug called Tecfidera, $5,000 in the U.S., $600 in the United Kingdom. Now, Here, and this is disturbing, OxyContin, the narcotic painkiller, right, less expensive in the U.S. than in Great Britain. In Great Britain, $590 for 30 days. In the U.S., $265. There's a couple of other things that were less that I was kind of surprised. Again, this is in the UK, the United Kingdom, Great Britain, versus the United States. Angiograms cost about twice as much. CT scans cost a little bit more, $860 in the United Kingdom, $844 in the U.S. Colonoscopy, three times as much. It was $3,060 in the United Kingdom, $1,300 in the U.S. On the other hand, we pay more for MRI scans, about $300 more, and we pay about $1,000, $5,000 instead of $4,000 for cardiac catheterizations. Your average cost per day of a hospital, $5,000 in the U.S., $4,700 in Switzerland, $700 in Australia, $600 in South Africa, $400 in Spain. So if you want to spend a day in the hospital, go to Spain. You can you're going to save $4,600 a day. That's enough easily to pay for airfare and a pretty nice. You should do that. Then when you go, if you're going to have, and you know this, if you're doing major orthopedic surgery, hip replacement, $29,000 in the U.S., $6,700 in Spain, a C-section, $16,000 in the U.S., $2,000 in South Africa. So if you have elective surgeries, you go abroad, you get a lot better price on them. Would you go overseas to have your hip replaced?
No. No, but then again, you know, I'm one of the, you know, Americans that has pretty good health insurance, and I wouldn't do it.
No, but you could, for the same price, I mean, I bet you could work a deal with your insurance company where you could go to India or a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
You could do all sorts of touring around and then get your hip fixed.
But Tony, of course, you know,
you're going to have a bad hip, so you wouldn't turn
very much. Physician. Why would I ever leave my physician?
Well, you could take me with you for the amount of money you save, and I would like to see India. I've never been there.
I can't imagine that. I would like to see India, but
okay,
I wouldn't like to see it on crutches or in a cart.
Tell you what. Take me over there. I'll take care of you.
You'll see India.
I'll bring you some pictures,
yeah,
and you'll get your hip fixed, and you'll still come out ahead.
No way. No way. No, I wouldn't leave.
Okay.
I wouldn't leave. But then again, you know, if it was something a little more, I mean, I guess a hip's pretty critical, but again, I think the delta in cost, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I would.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is I'm kind of cut from an old mold where I've kind of built a foundation of trust and relationships, and you know, when it comes to that health, I tend to engage those relationships and those, you know, histories and stuff like that. So I mean, I'm reluctant to go. I mean, you know, I still have you listed as my family care physician, and we all know don't anybody tell, you know, the insurance companies, because you're probably not the guy who's going to give me my physical.
I'm doing palliative care house calls right now. So my plan is to wait till you get terminal cancer, and then I'll come visit you. But I don't think that's really a good health plan for
you.
Well,
and if it's a financial model for you, it's going to be broken.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take me a while, hopefully. But
yeah,
I'm just saying.
I've got time.
So I'm kind of built from that old school kind of, you know, I've built. And frankly, Tony, let's be honest. We're in healthcare. We've been around healthcare. You know, in my case, I'm still heavily married to healthcare. We kind of build those relationships. We build those trusts. And so, no, I don't know that I would leave the country in that case. But, you know, now, change some things, change some variables in that equation. Not being in the industry. Possibly, you know, not having enough savings to cover a procedure like that. Then, you know, that might change the equation considerably.
You know, there can be a situation, something like a heart valve, where whether or not you get the procedure might depend upon on your ability to pay for it. And in that case, you may be able to travel and get it done where you couldn't get it done in the U.S.
Right.
And that's a thing to think about.
Absolutely.
We both, I now have two people that have gone to Mexico for a gastric sleeve, a gastric bypass, gastric sleeve.
They call it a vacation.
Yeah. And frankly, it was a very quick procedure. It was done for a fraction of the cost, and both of them had good results. And so I have had some experience with people going out of the country for surgery, although it is limited. So I just thought, you know, you look at that, and the surprising thing is some of the diagnostic tests actually are cheaper in the U.S., which caught me off guard. On the other hand, the medications, other than narcotics, the other medications are just out of this world, unfair in favor of the other country.
So you know, Tony, you know, I went to high school in Southern Arizona, right? So, and I was literally, and the funny thing was, is you know, how many of us are just, you probably were. I was not the smartest high schooler. I mean, let's let the record reflect here. I did not have those deep thinking skills, right? So I did not think about, one of the things that I do now is I have a proximity alert that goes off in my head when I'm somewhere. I know where I'm at right now, and I can visualize it on a map and what's around me. I couldn't do that in high school. I didn't even try. Somewhere along the way, I developed that skill.
I got to say, this is a great story. I have no idea where it's going, but it's a great story.
I literally was in high school as the crow flies 20 miles from the Mexican border. And so I knew all of my friends and families and everybody went to Mexico to get all their dental work done. All the dentistry work went across the border. And when I finally realized, oh, my gosh, we're only 20 miles from Mexico. Well, that makes sense. It was just funny. It was one of those things where if I was 20 miles from somewhere now, I would know it. But in high school, I had no clue. And let's be honest, the real intent of that entire story was to prevent you from putting on something when you didn't have enough time.
You know,
so I have absolutely done my job
Rick
here.
Rick becomes loquacious when we get down to the end of a segment. just to annoy, I want you to realize the great depths.
10, 9, 8.
That you go to annoy me. It's ridiculous. Stay tuned for our
figure
third and final
you
extra portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our special salute to lawyer, KGB agent, abnormal walker, and U.S. political power broker, Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin. Because we did. I mean, I don't know why. It's just this political campaign has become absolutely fascinating in an O.J. Simpson sort of way.
Esque.
Yes, because you expect one of the candidates to hop into a white Ford Bronco and head for the airport while the helicopters follow him.
We couldn't
get that lucky.
We couldn't get that lucky.
Well, I am busy right now compiling a list of things I don't like about both candidates, and whichever list is shorter, that's the person I'm going to go with. And right now, it's their long list. I'll put it that way. Our sponsor for the final time, the 5 Nutrition Facts Misconceptions That Sabotage Patient Health, reminding you, number one, the percent daily values don't add up to 100%. Well, of course not. They are percent of the daily values of different things. Two, 2,000 calorie daily diet should be used for general nutrition advice. Well, they say not so. Yours may be higher or lower, which is true, but it'll get you in the ballpark. Three, small package foods aren't necessarily a single serving. One of the greatest disappointments of my life. Four, all calories count. As a general rule, 400 calories per serving is high, 100 is moderate. Fat-free does not mean calorie-free. And then number five, 75% of your dietary sodium, which is the thing about salt that we don't like, does not come from the salt shaker. It comes from packaged and restaurant foods. The top 10, bread, cheese, deli foods, pizza, soup, savory snacks, mixed pasta, and meat dishes. And there are other ways of getting salt as well, but not so much from the salt shaker. Even if you throw away the salt shaker, you've still got 75% of your salt coming from other sources. That's our sponsor. Rick, there is a drug called Narcan or Naloxone. Do you know anything about it?
No idea.
Narcan or Naloxone is the stuff you use to reverse a narcotic overdose. We use it in the emergency room. Somebody comes in. They are barely breathing or not breathing. They may be either extremely sleepy or unconscious, and we think they have taken a drug overdose, or in some cases, we don't know what they've done. We go ahead and inject them with Narcan. It blocks the effects of the narcotics on their brain. It actually wakes them up in a matter of seconds to minutes. They're wide awake. They're breathing again. Now, it's short-acting, so you can use it for a diagnosis, and then sometimes you have to put them on a drip to maintain them. The neat thing about Naloxone is if you had that out in the community, when you came upon a person who had overdosed, you could reverse it temporarily on the spot. So so the idea was we would get Narcan out in the community. In 2014, more than 47,000 Americans died from drug overdoses, and again, 60% of those were narcotics, which could be reversible by naloxone. This is an old, old drug. There was one company making it called Humira, and it cost a dose, cost $1.10.
Okay.
So it was dirt cheap.
Dirt cheap.
New
Not $4 a month, but
well,
still.
Well, new competitors have come on the market. Now, the lowest price you can get it, generic, is over $20.
Wow.
Yeah. And there is one manufacturer that makes a pre-filled auto-injector. This is a really nice thing. If you're on a rescue squad or if you're a John Q. Public, there's an auto-injector. You set it up, and it will automatically, it'll talk you through giving them an injection of a life-saving drug. So you could send an auto-injector home with a person who is known to be a drug addict. If you had somebody in your family or someone who living with you who is known to have problems with addiction to narcotics, you would get one of these auto-injectors, and then it would be there sort of like an EpiPen for allergies.
Wow.
If you saw them overdose, you'd auto-inject them. The price of the auto-injector went from $600 to $4,500 over a year. Due to demand and increased prices, sales of naloxone have increased by 400% since 2011. The pre-filled injector people, the $4,500 people, they were giving them away to charitable organizations and rescue squads, but they closed their program until next January due to overwhelming demand. So here's the thing. We have an epidemic, 47,000 Americans a year dying of drug overdoses. We have a drug that we could get out in the community to reverse these drug overdoses. The price now went from $1.10 to $20, but you would have to draw it up yourself. If you want like an EpiPen that you could give to a drug addict, $4,500 for one of those. Last month, U.S. Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Claire McCaskill of Missouri, a Republican and a Democrat respectively, they wrote the drug makers and said, why in the face of a drug epidemic, why is the price of naloxone going up by 1,000% or more? The same answers we always get. We're working on quality. We're working on administration and system. Keep in mind, we use discounts and rebates. So those prices you see, it's not a true price to anyone. It's covered by insurances and so forth. In other words, once again, we're picking up the tab.
Right.
So
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, it's the same thing they always say. When you hear a drug company say, well, we have a discount program, what they're saying is, give us all your money, and we will use it wisely and let you have some of it back. And Forbes has done the analysis and shown that the discount programs don't even come close to
discounting.
Yeah, to discounting, to offsetting the increase in price. Yes, they could shift our money around to someone else, but in fact, they don't even do that. They keep most of our money. They give a couple of people a pen, and they do it for public relations. So again, we hit this in our second fractional portion. We'll hit it again. Here is a vital drug, a $1.10 drug, and now it comes as an auto-injector, a nice feature, but it goes from $1.10 a dose to $4,500. That's
a lot.
It's discouraging. A couple of fun things. This was Fox News Health, believe it or not. Not one of my common sources, but I like this. July 18th, Tufts University have integrated conductive threads through multiple layers of tissue to gather diagnostic data wirelessly in real time. Now, think about it, Rick. If you have surgery, they're going to stitch you up. They're going to stitch you up with, we used to call it cat gut.
Okay.
Because it was cat gut. They would stitch you up with some type of a synthetic or a naturally made stitches. They'll right. put them in, they'll tie them off, they'll put a Band-Aid over it, and then nobody's going to look at it till tomorrow. But why would you, if you had a stitch running through your body, why would we not put some sensors in that and get some information?
Well, yeah. Duh.
It could tell us very early on whether your wound was getting infected. It could tell us whether or not the temperature was the same as the rest of your body. Perhaps it was too cold because it's not getting a good blood supply. Perhaps, again, it's too hot because of inflammation and irritation. It could monitor the fluids that are weeping out of the wound. All sorts of things. This is Samir Sankosale, who's the director of the Interdisciplinary Nano Lab in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Tufts. He says, we think thread-based devices could potentially be used as smart sutures for surgical implants, smart bandages to monitor wound healing, or integrated with textile or fabric as personalized health monitors and point-of-care diagnostics. This is a pretty darn neat thing. Soon, rather than embedding something in the cloth, in fact, could be made of the sensor. The bandage, the suture, or the fabric of your hospital gown.
And you don't have any trouble with them electrifying your suture.
All right.
I'm asking. That was you don't have any trouble with that. Because, I mean, none of this stuff's going to work without some sort of electrical source.
Okay.
Well, it's okay. No, I'm sure it'll attach to a battery pack or something. I mean, it's probably not gonna work off of your.
I can't believe a medical miracle, and you're picking it apart because it's got a battery pack.
Not entirely sure it's a miracle at this point, but nonetheless.
But I got to say, you were picking at your sutures, which is that's.
No,
good.
I'm just saying. No, this is interesting. I'll be curious to see how they power it. You know, because again, I think it'll be interesting to see. But it is cool to think that we can start, you know, monitoring wounds. I mean, this gives wound care a whole different, you know, for the people that actually make site visits, then you could actually visit when the wound needs to be, you know, when it's due, not necessarily just because it's
right.
Tuesday.
And it was wirelessly transmitted to a cell phone and a computer, so you could actually monitor that wound
exactly
from the hospital or from the doctor's
exactly.
office.
But you could, I mean, just think, you could even, you know, it could even give you an alert, hey, you too much activity, you need to lay down, you're stressing it, you know, there's all kinds of things you could do with it. It's a really cool concept. It seems like it's still probably a few years away.
It is. I mean, it was a kind of a proof of concept published in Microsystems and Nanoengineering mid-July. They collected data on the tissue health, that stress, strain, and temperature, and pH and glucose levels. Again, these sutures would wick the fluid that came out of the wound.
It's still pretty cool.
And they could check the glucose levels in that fluid to look at, your electrolyte balance, healing status, and so forth. And then the other one, I have already posted this on the Health Matters Facebook page. This was University of Stuttgart, and it was published, I ran across it July 13th, a camera lens that it is the size of a period on a credit card.
Okay.
It is 3D printed,
okay.
So they can make these things by the hundreds,
right?
If they wanted to do so, and obviously you can. First of all, this is the way. I mean, here's a provocative headline: these 3D printed cameras are so tiny they can be injected into your brain. When does being injected into your brain? When is that a?
And who says I have a tiny brain?
Let me explain that, Rick. Now, you may have heard something there, but I took that back. That was private.
Remember,
conversation.
6'2", Tony.
Yeah,
6'2".
I know, but I'm just thinking, well, who asked that? I mean, it says, "Gee, that's pretty small. I wonder if you could inject it into your brain." That's not the way you measure size. This is small enough to be injected. I don't understand it. I really, but you talk
about.
Have
you seen the
scary.
Size of that needle?
You talk about scary, but they did mention an ordinary needle. This camera will slip through it. So yeah, you could just shoot it under the skin. You know, before, I mean, even in the science fiction movies, they always have to make they always have to cut things out. You know, they've implanted some kind of a bug or something.
Right.
Well, this thing right here, you wouldn't even know it. I mean, honestly, I could hit you with a dart gun, and when you pull the dart out, it's in.
Dude, you could drink it.
True.
Just think. Get a whole new perspective on things.
Well, and, you know, we've had so much trouble with Google Glass, and we've had so much trouble with cell phones taking pictures in places where it wasn't warranted. At least you could see them. This thing is so small, you wouldn't even see it, and it could be taking pictures.
But my guess is it's taking pretty small pictures, too.
Yeah, but I've not even seen a science fiction movie where things went that small, you know. And, again, I guess in a movie it wouldn't do to have things that small because it wouldn't be a very good movie. You couldn't see it.
Well, now they got to make them dissolvable, right? So you put them in, they last for, you know, 3 months and then dissolve.
And then you'd never know. But I really think if you look at between this and drones,
right,
I do not believe in the future there will be privacy at all. Pretty much every time we access
as long as
the
there's
web,
shotguns,
call,
there'll be privacy.
You're gonna have to really work hard to avoid surveillance because right now it sounds like I can put cameras all over your house.
Yeah, you
that
can.
That you would never even find. Or if you did find it, you wouldn't even know it was a camera.
Right.
Well,
I mean, I'm at the point where I don't really care. If you want to, if that brings you happiness, you're watching the wrong thing. You got bigger problems.
I'm going to spy on Rick.
Hey, you're
going to go, no,
good
really?
Good luck doing it that at my house.
Yeah, it's not going to be. All right.
I do have some electronic countermeasures, so I'm
Well, now you got me intrigued. So you think you could defeat my 3D printed micro camera that I could inject into your brain?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
I didn't think
you but had I, but I would see you coming with a needle, and that'd be my first clue. Tony, get away from me for that needle.
That's a $4,500 Narcan. It's just, this is good. You'll like this. I don't know. All right.
So what we're saying is really the days of Total Recall are coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, well, you know, I mean, it is exciting. Taken together, the thread and the camera, you start to realize that the diagnostic ability that we will have, the ability to monitor that we will have has changed so much
right.
from what we're doing now. We talk about wearables, but again, these are things implantables would even give us more information than wearables. And by implantables, we don't mean that you have to have surgery and a big battery pack put in or anything like that. Essentially, we could shoot that in with a needle, or when we stitch you up, we could stitch you up with a monitoring strip built into the stitches. This is
I can tell you're a little fascinated.
Well, I am. I'm terrified of those little cameras, but still, the idea of being able to see this.
You don't want
to
see what's in there?
Well, I don't know. I guess if you had a brain aneurysm, you could make a movie of it. You know, you ask yourself, why would I want a repeat CAT scan? I'll just stick a little camera in there, and I'll just watch it grow. See what happens.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe in the case of that, you're going to have to direct it there with blood flow, right? And so necessarily navigating it through the system. I mean, I'm sure you could have some kind of video game with magnets and some crazy thing where you could guide it through the patient's torso. But, you know, I think, you know, it'll be interesting to get stuff like that into the right location and how they figure out how to do that.
Yeah, but, you know, keep in mind, I can shoot it in with a needle.
You can. But if you're going to put it in the bloodstream, then you got to get, you know, who knows where it's going to end up, right? I mean, let's face it, we've got a great transport system in the body.
That's true. And you also know that things that we put in the body migrate. And so these tiny cameras, there's no telling where that camera is going to be in about 6 weeks.
Absolutely. And I mean, good thing we may not want to see.
That's true. Oh, there comes a picture I didn't want to.
Whoa.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up in the meeting.
That has moved. Okay. This is going to be a little graphic, and I apologize to our listeners, but I want to explain this. July 25th, the CDC and the Pan American Health Organization, some new Zika recommendations. And I wanted to mention these for our radio fans just to let you know. First of all, it is our opinion and the estimates of experts that this thing is so infectious, it's going to blow itself out fairly quickly, and they anticipate that it will, in fact, over the next year or so, we will get enough herd immunity that it will not spread as widely as initially feared. But this thing is nasty. And they mentioned risky sexual activities. If you or someone you love has gone to an area that has the Zika virus or potentially infected with the Zika virus, they recommend that no sex without a barrier method. That includes oral sex. That includes, I'll just say it, that includes sex toys. This, it gets, you know, there was a woman who transmitted it to a man, so it does get in the secretion, so this is a big problem. They also said for men with Zika infections who are part of a couple not pregnant, not planning on becoming pregnant, barrier protection or abstaining from sex for at least 6 months after illness onset. For women, same protective steps for at least 8 weeks. So again, if your significant other travels to a Zika area or you travel to a Zika area.
And is this something in case you're going to the Olympics?
Yeah, it really is. And so this is you're going to change your sexual routines for a long time.
And what a way to end the show.
Thanks, Rick. Get us off the air.
Special thanks to our summer Morehead State Public Radio producer, Tanner Boyd, and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
Thanks for our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC. Thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
in 2014, more than 47,000 Americans died from Health Matters overdose.
There is an antidote. It works by blocking the effects of Health Matters on your brain. It used to cost $1, but now it can cost up to $4,500.
The manufacturers say they give discounts, so nobody really pays that price. Whatever the true price is, first responders and volunteer groups are unable to afford a medicine that is proven to save lives in drug overdose, and that used to cost $1.
Whatever you do, do not overdose on Health Matters and do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.